it on still. Hi. I'll get up here eventually. How's everyone doing today? Good. Hopefully this will log in here. All right, like they said, we are learning a little bit about Job today. So this is the last week of our series that we call Wisdom. And, you know, we don't talk enough about wisdom, do we? Like, maybe we just don't do enough wisdom. Is that it? So during this series, we have looked at wisdom with a biblical perspective, but from different perspectives. So a couple weeks ago, Jared talked to us a little bit about the challenges to wisdom. And he did it from the perspective of the critical teacher. And we looked at some scripture in Ecclesiastes to kind of look at that that perspective. So does anyone remember the Hebrew word that we learned that week? Hevel. You got to get real. It's good this time of year. So we learned about hevel, which is like catching smoke or trying to grab like a mist or something like that. And we talked about how life is meaningless. It was a real uplifting message. Go back and listen to it. But there's a certain wise perspective that you can get from the book of Ecclesiastes, even though it may seem a little bit cynical at times. Go back and read that book and think about wisdom as you read it. Now, last week, Matt talked to us about where we can find wisdom. And he did that by looking at the book of Proverbs. And he did it from the perspective of Lady Wisdom and kind of a more hopeful approach. Now, he did tell us that if we look at Proverbs as promises, then we might be disappointed, right? Because Proverbs are not promises. It's like a recipe, but, you know, you can have... I'm going to use this example. He didn't want to use it last week, but you guys like the Great British Baking Show? Okay. I love that show. There's three different kind of bakes that they do, and the second bake is called the... Any fans? The technical... She knows! The technical bake. Thank you, because I literally forgot. So it was the technical bake. So what they do is everybody is given the same ingredients and the same recipe with limited information on it, and they are expected to make the same thing. How often do they all make identical things? Never. Never, because it may be something they not even know what it's supposed to look like at the end. It doesn't matter if we all have the same recipe. It's our experience, it's our knowledge that we put into something that determines the outcome. So today, we're going to look at some practical ways to apply wisdom in our life. And we're going to do it through the perspective of the wise old man. I've always had a thing for, like, cranky old men. Like, I like hanging out with cranky old men. Our personalities kind of match. So it kind of makes sense for me to talk from this perspective. But the thing about the wise old man is that he's got, like, he's old. So he has, like, a lifetime of experiences and knowledge to base his wisdom off of. More than likely, there's been some mistakes made that have been learned from. There's been some watching, like, other people's mistakes to learn from. And we're going to do this by looking at the book of Job. So Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job, they make up what's known as the wisdom literature of the Bible. Does anyone like to just read through Job? Weirdo. It's a tough book, right? It's a tough book to get through. Now, I love the book of Job, but I hate reading through it. Like, I like the beginning and I like the end, but that middle stuff, whew, it's hard to get through. See, I've always imagined Job as being the book that you read when you're going through a bad time in your life, and you need to be reminded that things could be worse. It's one of those things that you're like, well, I mean, at least I'm not Job. But it really is a work of art. Now, the more that I've read the book, the more I've studied the book and looked at the context and understood it a little bit better, the more I've fallen in love with this work of art. So most of you are probably at least a little bit familiar with Job's story, right? A little bit. So here's a quick overview. Job was a man, and he lived in the land of Uz a long time ago. We don't know when. We don't know where Uz was. That rhymed. Y'all, I'm cracking myself up this morning. We don't know anything more about his story or of the people around him besides what we have in the book. And you know, that's okay. Because the important thing about the book of Job is the story that we read in it. So does anyone like plays? Some Hamilton fans? Anyone? I love plays. Like, I've always loved Broadway. I just love plays. I love the theatrical components of it, especially the musicals. With good choreography, it just like, whew. But the stories, they come to life, but not in a very real sense. So with a play, you have one stage, and then you have props. So like in a movie, you can be taken to like Mordor, and you can see it, like you can experience. You can be taken to another country. You can be at the Eiffel Tower, and you can see something play out. You can be taken to different places and see it, and it's very realistic, most movies. But in a play, you have to use your imagination. So you guys are going to have to use your imagination with me today, because we only have a single stage with a limited number of characters. The lines are delivered in a more theatrical way. It's not so much conversational as it is, like, face the crowd, and yes, the person you're talking to is here, but you've got to, like, emote over here. Each person takes turns with their parts and their lines. And I've heard somebody reference Job, the book of Job, and compare it to a Shakespearean play. Now, once you kind of read through it with that mindset, it kind of changes the way that you read the book. It's almost like reading a play. And it kind of put it all in a new perspective for me. So use your imagination next time you read it and read it more like a play. So the play of Job, it opens in the heavenly realms. God's seated before all the divine beings, and he's sitting there, and he's bragging on this dude named Job. And God's saying things like, look, like, consider my servant Job, how good and faithful he is. He lives a life of integrity and in awe and service of who I am. But see, there was this one divine being, and he's noted as being, he's called the adversary. And he challenges God. And he tells him, he said, yeah, but this Job guy, he's only good and faithful because his life is blessed. If you take away every blessing in his life, he will turn his back on you. And so God responds by telling the adversary in Job 1:12, everything he has is in your hand. Only against him you may not put your hand. So God's like, want to bet? Like, okay, let's see. Because I believe in Job. Because I have a relationship with Job. I believe in him. I know his heart. So this is the part where most people are kind of familiar with. So Job's servants, his livestock, and his children were all killed through attacks and accidents and just a series of horrible events. He begins mourning and lamenting, but he does not curse the name of God. And then his friends show up. You see where it's kind of starting to sound a little bit like a Shakespearean tragedy? His friends show up. Have you ever known someone that just can't seem to resist kicking you a little bit while you're down? See, at first, Job's friends, they seem like they're there to comfort him. And then they just open up a big old can of guilt and start throwing accusations against him. See, they assume that Job must have done something bad or sinned in order for all of these bad things to happen with him. See, they were living with the black and white mindset of proverbs or promises. So if you do the good thing, then the good thing's going to happen to you. If you do a bad thing, that means that something bad's going to happen. So if something bad happened, then you must have done something bad. Like, you deserve this in some way because God is just. And so he wouldn't let a bad thing happen to you if you did the good thing. See, that's the Proverbs or promises mindset. See, they just assume that he did something bad. So they start questioning and like throwing these things at him like, well, did you do this? Surely you did this. And when Job defended himself, they accused him of lying. Can you imagine going through the worst time in your life and your closest friends are putting the blame on you? They're good friends, right? You guys have friends like that? Don't. Not. You know, this makes up the majority of the book, this back and forth commentary between the friends and Job. 32 chapters, to be exact. That's a lot of commentary, a lot of, well, you must have done this. No, I didn't. No, you're lying. It can be very depressing. And, you know, it doesn't seem like, as you're reading through it, that it doesn't seem like there's going to be any kind of resolution. See, the friends say that God is just and fair, and therefore he would not allow these things to happen unless Job had done something to deserve it. These chapters, they show the back and forth confidence and insecurity that Job is experiencing at this time. See, on one line, Job comes across as being very confident that God is good, God is just, and that I have not done anything to deserve this in my life. But then the next line, he seems plagued by doubt and insecurity. See, Job is struggling to discern God's truth, but he's overwhelmed by the voices of his friends. See, his friends, let's think of what they're doing. They're causing Job to focus in on himself in the situation. See, they placed Job in the seat of control of God's actions toward him. Well, Job, if you did this thing, like, you had to have done this thing for this to happen, because unless you make an action, God can't. Like, God can't do something unless you initiate it. Like, you're in control of God's actions towards you. And see, the more that Job focused in on himself, the more his sorrow grew. See, looking at the world from your own perspective, it often leads you feeling victimized. We see this in the way that Job reacts to what happened to him initially versus his reaction after sitting and talking to his friends about his misery. The situation had not changed, but his focus did. So this was his immediate reaction as soon as he found out all the news. It's found in Job 1:20. It says, Job stood up, this is before his friends got there. He stood up and he tore his robe in grief. Then he shaved his head and he fell to the ground to worship. He said, I came naked from my mother's womb and I will be naked when I leave. The Lord gave me what I had and the Lord has taken it away. Praise the name of the Lord. No, that's an exclamation point. Praise the name of the Lord. Gosh, he was confident. In all of this, Job did not sin by blaming God. His entire world crumbled, and he bowed down and said, God, I trust you even in this. Whew. Like, ooh. Y'all, if that doesn't get you, you're not listening. He did not blame God, and he did not wallow in self-pity. Now, tearing his clothes, shaving his head, that was ritualistic mourning for his time period, the culture that he was in. But he took on a posture of worship and trust. See, he obviously did not or could not understand why it had all happened. But that did not cause him to lose his faith. See, his reaction after listening to his friends and focusing on himself for a little while, it sounds just a little bit different. So we're going to skip ahead to Job 31, 35, and 37. If only someone would listen to me. It sounds pretty pathetic, huh? If only someone would listen to me. Look, I will sign my name to my defense. That doesn't sound like a posture of worship. That's a posture of defense. Let the Almighty answer me. Whew, he's getting brave. Let my accuser write out the charges against me. I would face the accusation proudly. I would wear it like a crown. It's getting cocky. For I would tell him exactly what I have done. I would come before him like a prince. Say what now, Job? See, every phrase in this passage, it says either me, my, or I. Where's his focus? He's focusing in on himself. And while he's doing that, he literally demands that God comes down, faces him, and explains himself. I'm not going to do that. That's a little intimidating when you think about it, you know. But how many times are you just like, God, I don't understand. You're going to have to explain this to me. But see, it's one thing to ask God questions. That's actually a good thing. That's how you learn. But it's another to demand that he explains his actions to you. So God appears to him. But he doesn't just show up in some angelic, like, Precious Moments doll kind of form. No, he comes in a storm. Some translations even call it a hurricane. Sounds a little intimidating, huh? And God does not directly answer Job, but what he does say, it changes everything. So I would really encourage you guys to read the last couple chapters of Job sometime this week, because the journey that God takes Job on, I wish I could read it all, but you probably, well, we don't have time for that. It's amazing. So God basically takes Job on a virtual tour of the universe. He shows them the vastness and the tiniest details of the world. And he challenges Job to consider if he would be capable of running it or even understanding it for a single day. What you got, Job? Think you can handle this? See, God talks about nature and creatures and how he created it to all work together. And the complexity of the world shows Job that there is so much more going on than he is capable as a human of understanding. He is simply one part of God's overall creation. You know, a fresh perspective can really change the way that we see the world. And we live in a world now where we have limitless access to information. And you would think that with all of this access to information, we'd have a little bit better understanding of our place in the universe. But what do we do with it? Do we use that access wisely? You know, Matt spoke a bit last week about this, so I don't want to get into detail on it, but I do want to ask, what do you think would happen if we used this resource as a window to see and understand the rest of the world instead of using it as a mirror to focus the world in on ourselves. So back to Job. And then God kind of takes things in a weird direction. And y'all, this is the reason why I love Job, because I'm kind of snarky and sarcastic, and God just gets straight up snarky, and I love it. God tells Job, take a look at Behemoth, which I made just as I made you. Now, what is Behemoth? It's not something we're going to run into at the zoo. Like, we don't know what this creature is. Like, some people have compared it to, like, a hippo or something like that. But from the description in Job, which you guys should seriously read, it's so cool. It doesn't sound like a hippo. It sounds much bigger and much more terrifying. It's strong and wild. And God says it is a prime example of God's handiwork, and only its creator can threaten it. Man has no power against the behemoth. No man can catch, tame, or control this beast. Only God. And then God tells us, he tells Job about another creature, the Leviathan. Now, the description of this creature, it gets all the nerdiness, like, really going for me. Do you guys like Tolkien? That's the author of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings for you non-nerdy people. This description sounds like something out of a Tolkien book, but it's in the Bible, and it's just really cool. Okay, Job 41, it says, when it sneezes, it flashes light. Its eyes are like the red of dawn. Lightning leaps from its mouth. Flames of fire flash out. Smoke streams from its nostrils like a steam from a pot heated over burning rushes. Its breath would kindle coals, for flames shoot out of its mouth. Needs a breath mint. Does that not sound cool? Like, it sounds super cool. We need a, that needs to be your next creation. That's a challenge here. So the behemoth and the Leviathan, both are described as beasts of great strength and power. But why is God telling Job, in his current condition of misery, about these intimidating creatures? Let's think about it. Do they sound good? No. Do they sound kind? Pleasant? Not going to invite them over for afternoon tea? No, these creatures could easily kill you and not give it a thought. They could step on a human like a bug. But still, God is talking about how awesome they are and how they are a prime example of his creation and design. Now, could it be that even though we may not consider them to be good, that in the fact that they are being what they were created to be, that they are good in God's eyes? God did not ask our opinion on what he considers to be good. When we think of how they relate to us, it's hard for us to see them as being good because they present danger, they present intimidation, fear, but they have a purpose. Anybody scared of snakes? Yeah. I love snakes. And I have people that say that there's no such thing as a good snake. The only good snake is a dead snake. Have you heard that one? But God created king snakes. And king snakes serve a purpose. Because you know what they like to snack on? The venomous snakes. So there are such a thing as good snakes. So I'm just saying. It's a park ranger coming out in me. But just like we might look at a creature like a snake and we might say, there's nothing good about this. Are we qualified to look at part of God's creation and say that it is not good? Are we able to understand the purpose in which it was created? So with this in mind, are we qualified to determine whether or not our behavior is good or that God's behavior is good? So let's sum some stuff up. I know I've kind of talked in some circles here, huh? So from Job's point of view, God has not been fair or just to him. But God shows him that when he makes decisions, it is with the full complexity of the entire universe in mind. So how did Job take this? He says in chapter 42, verse 1, I know that you can do anything and no one can stop you. You asked, who is this that questions my wisdom with such ignorance? It is I. And I was talking about things I knew nothing about. Things far too wonderful for me. Sounds a lot more humble than appearing to God as a prince. See, Job's final response, it comes from a place of humble acceptance and trust. The place where he had begun. But see, asking questions of God, it's not a bad thing. Like, don't take it away that you're not supposed to ask God questions. That's how we grow. That's how we learn. However, when we ask questions from a position of assuming that we can understand the answers, then we tend to do one of two things. First, we can oversimplify God like Job's friends did. See, they thought that they understood how God works, so they assumed a position of authority and attempted to speak for God to Job from their limited perspective. The second thing is we can accuse God based on limited evidence like Job did. See, by considering what happened to him only from his perspective, Job could not see a bigger plan or purpose. It's like when my kids get upset when I tell them it's time to get ready for bed. See, all they see is in that moment, I'm ending their fun. But what I see is the next morning falling apart because I have two grumpy kids that didn't get enough sleep because I didn't make them go to bed in time. Their obedience in getting ready and going to bed when they're told to is a wise decision. It also helps them keep their toys. So what practical application of wisdom do we learn from the book of Job? See, we can learn to recognize that there is so much more going on than what we can see or understand. And it's okay. It's okay because God is in control and we can trust that he is good. See, the entire book of Job is an invitation to trust God's wisdom above your own. So let's look at how it ends. In chapter 42, it says, God blessed the latter part of Job's life more than the former part. Now, he had a blessed life to begin with. He had family and servants and wealth and property, and it all fell away. But God blessed the latter part of his life even more. His wealth, his family, everything was restored. And then after this, Job lived 140 years. People used to live longer back then. I think it's because of fast food. He saw his children and their children to the fourth generations. And so Job died, an old man full of years. You know, if we just focus on the part where everything's falling apart, we cannot see hope, can we? We miss that it was only a short time of sorrow in a long life of joy. So why were we given this part of Job's story? Like, could we not have learned from his whole story? Or could we not have learned from, like, the beginning part or the end part? Why were we given the darkest part of Job's story that people have read for literally thousands of years? See, I believe that we were given this part of Job's story to teach us that it is in the moments of pain and sorrow and weakness that our wisdom can be shaped the most. See, it shows us in those times of weakness when we have nothing left, we have nothing that we can personally hold on to. It's in those moments that God can show us that He is faithful, that God can show us that we can trust Him because He is good, that when we can't walk, He will carry us. So let's look at some practical ways to apply this wisdom in our world today. First, we need to learn how to use discernment in a too much world. So what voices are you listening to? We have a constant information flow, and it can be very overwhelming. We constantly have, 24-hour news sources of every variety telling us anything and everything. We have social media where anybody can say anything and it's accepted as truth. We have a constant flow of people's opinions and ideas. So how do we use discernment? Because it's easy to lose our focus. And it's hard to figure out who we can trust. See, Job, he was surrounded by the voices of his friends when he was the most vulnerable in his life. And their messages, they contradicted one another. And they contradicted the truth that he knew before they showed up. But the voices were loud. The voices were constant and the voices were convincing. But what happened? They left him feeling worse than he did before. See, it was only when he chose to listen to the voice of God that he was able to see his situation from a wider perspective. See, so much of what we hear does not align with God's perspective and purpose for us. So we have to learn how to use wise discernment to know what is true and what is good. Next, we need humility in a too focused on me world. So a few years ago, Oprah made a speech at the Golden Globes. And in the speech, she said this: speaking your truth is the most powerful tool that we all have. Now, in context, it encourages people that their voices have the power to affect change. And I very much agree with her. It was a great speech. But see, some people, they took the idea of my truth and they formed it into a mantra or an excuse for belief and behavior that often conflicts with God. It became a sort of movement. But if my truth is valued above God's truth, then we create a society of autonomous people that are only interested in serving their own needs and desires. So I don't know if you guys know this, but NFL football season starts today. The real teams start playing today. Anyways, in football, we look and we can see the players, and honestly, I love watching games. I still have no idea what happens. But we watch these players, and they all know the rules. And they all follow the rules. And if they don't follow the rules, there's people that tell them they're not following the rules. Now, can you imagine watching a football game where every player walked onto the field with their own perspective of their own rules? It would be probably hilarious. But it would be a mess. See, for them to be able to successfully play a game, they all have to agree and submit to the same set of rules. By that example, why would we think that we could create a functioning society without some kind of baseline standards that we could all yield to? When Job listens to his friends, he became focused on his own misery. He felt justified in crying out to God and accusing him of being unfair. But once God widened Job's perspective, Job realized that he had no real control, but because God is in control and because God is good, every little thing, it's gonna be all right. Job showed wisdom in yielding to God's truth over his truth. And finally, we can learn how to apply patience in a too fast world. This one's especially hard, isn't it? This is the one I probably struggle with the most. See, we live in a fast food, constant streaming, 24-hour instant gratification society. And it leaves us feeling like we should be able to have it our way immediately. See, waiting for people whose time is less than important, waiting's for people that don't have as many things to do as me. Like, I should be the one to keep people waiting. Like, people can't leave me waiting. Like, I'm too important for that. My time is too important. We're controlled by our jam-packed schedules that have constant deadlines. Being busy has become a social expectation. Let that sink in. When's the last time you said, hey, how you doing? And someone didn't say, oh, we're busy. It's a badge of honor. Subconsciously, we are trained to hustle harder or fake it until we make it or to push boundaries. But what are we trying to prove? And who are we trying to prove it to? So my dad is one of the wisest people that I know. And as a kid, and even now, like, I've always wanted to be as much like him as I can. And I remember as a kid, like, it was very often that we would finish eating dinner, and he would go outside, and there was always a trailer parked out in the back. And he would go, and he'd sit down on the back of a trailer, and he would just sit. He would just be. And because I wanted to be like him, I'd usually, you know, rush the dishes to the kitchen and do what I had to do, and then I'd run out after him, and then I'd go and I'd sit down next to him, and I'd sit there for a while and kick my feet and look around and I'd be like, what you doing? And his response was always the same, just ciphering. You guys know what ciphering is? It's working out things in your mind. It's thinking things over, working on stuff. See, he was just sitting and thinking. He was processing the day. He was planning the next. He was working out some kind of problem in his head. He was a carpenter. And so he's probably thinking over the next day, like, how am I going to, like, be able to do this and maneuver this around? And how am I going to build this and make this work? But also, it was just time that he just spent just talking to God. And this is something that he still does. We pulled up to his house a couple days ago. He was sitting on the back porch watching the cows, just ciphering. See, I firmly believe that this habit of physical and mental rest during his day is what formed him into the wise old man that he is. Because he's taken time to process through his knowledge and experiences and his relationships and apply them wisely. You know, it doesn't make you less of a person if you take a minute or two to breathe. So Mike is going to come back up and sing another song. Yeah, you are. Don't act like you didn't know. Well, they're all going to come up, but. You know, empty space, it makes us uncomfortable, doesn't it? Because we're used to a fast-paced world. But we're going to take some time during this last song, and we're just going to take some time to just breathe, to just be, take a minute and just cipher. You got to say it like that, too. You can't pronounce it right. It's got to be cipher. Don't try to fill this time. Don't fill this time with thoughts of things that you have to accomplish today or thinking through your schedule for this week. See, this is an opportunity to take some time to discern truth and humbly submit to God's plan and purpose for your life. So I want you guys to just, whether you just sit in your seat, stand up and worship, sit and worship, ask somebody to pray with you, whatever it is that you need to do in this moment to just create some space. We're creating the space for you. You guys already allotted to be here. So just take some time, make some room, and just take a deep breath and spend a few minutes to just cipher some. And I believe that you will leave here a little bit wiser than when you came in today.